All right. Well, who remembers our homework from last week? Rex does. Good. Is anybody else? Didn't do it, but you remembered. What was that? Not necessarily to come, but just to encourage someone. Yeah. And I won't put you guys on the spot and ask if you did that. That's more of a personal thing, but I'm glad that some of you remembered. That's good. That's an indication that perhaps some of that took place, and perhaps you guys were doing some encouraging and building up and edifying with your speech, even if you forgot the homework. So let's keep that in mind. And remember our homework from the previous week, even before that, was to look through the Proverbs and try to look for a proverb that you can commit to prayer and that you can incorporate into your prayer life. Have you guys been doing that? Yeah, maybe some.
And thankfully, there's songs that have those already incorporated. Like, for example, "Creating Me a Clean Heart, O God, and You Right Steadfaster in Me."
Yeah.
Bunch. So, thankfully, David was looking out for
it. Yeah, David knew what he was doing, didn't he? Yeah. And yeah, I think we need to keep that in mind, not just when we're reading through the Psalms, but when we're singing through our modern songs too. That a lot of them. Hopefully, a lot of them, especially the ones that we sing here, are directed toward God and are in some kind of a prayer-type format. And so it's important to not just sing empty words, right, but to actually be praying through what we're singing. And I hope that we're doing that for sure. Let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll jump in. God, we thank you again for your word. Thank you for the Proverbs, for the wisdom that you give us, for the wisdom that you give to your church, God. I pray that you would teach me and help me to better understand who you are and how to understand your word through these people, through this local body here, and that you would lead and guide us. God, I thank you for your Holy Spirit, that you haven't left us as orphans, but you have given us a helper, a comforter who is with us at all times. And God, that you are always with us. You have not left us or forsaken us. You haven't abandoned us. God, we thank you for the kids in the coin room. Pray that you would be working on their hearts, that they would be drawn closer to you tonight. And God, I pray the same for us, that we'd have a better understanding of you and a better understanding of how it is that you would have us to live our lives and to operate as Christians. God, we love you and praise you. Amen. All right. Well, tonight we are going to be talking about parenting and how the Proverbs relate to our parenting. So, to get started, can you guys think of any Proverbs that relate to parenting? I don't expect you to remember the references. I find Proverbs particularly difficult to remember the reference. What verse, what proverb goes to what passage? All right, perfect. I think that's probably the most popular. We're going to say the same one or a different one?
Different one. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him chastises him.
Right. You heard that one a lot growing up, didn't you?
Yeah.
You got that one right there at the ready. All right, well, I was kind of expecting that the one that Mike suggested would be the one that you guys remember, because it is one of the more popular Proverbs. Does anybody know where that is? Again, I just told you, you don't have to remember the reference, but all right. And Anna's not here. Anna said, every time I ask her a question, it's like I'm quizzing her. So, and that was intended to be a bit of a quiz, but that proverb is found in Proverbs 22:6. So let's go ahead and turn there together. Proverbs 22:6. And it says, to train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, remember last week, we talked about the concept of Proverbs and how they'll vary, they'll differ from time to time, and we need to understand them contextually. We use as our example Proverbs 26, 4, and 5, which says, do not answer the fool according to... No, do not... What's that? Yeah, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. instead answer a fool according to his folly, lest he become wise in his own eyes. And so right there in back-to-back verses, it seems to be saying contradictory things. And so we need to understand it in context. And this verse in particular can actually be understood a number of different ways. What are some of the ways you guys have heard this verse taught, or you understand this verse, or even translated? It'll be translated differently sometimes. What should we make of this verse? The train of a child and the way he should go.
I've heard, I think it was a pastor that said it, it's going along with the child's natural bent, so you're not working against the child. You're actually going with how God created that child. So you're not kind of like, anyway, so that's, I think that's really important, because you don't want to damage the kid. I don't know if I'm going too far now.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a popular take on this verse. Let me just follow up with that understanding and ask, what is our natural propensity, the way that we naturally go? Sin, right?
It's to punish a child and to not discipline. There's a difference between them. If you're punishing a child, it's retributive, is that the right word? And you're not, number one, you can be doing it in anger, mm-hmm. which shouldn't be done. And number two, the child becomes, can like start rebellion in the child's heart.
Yeah. You know, Ephesians 6.
You're frustrating your bitter. Child in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, good.
I'm sorry.
Can I say go ahead.
I know what Michael was talking about. Is this Chuck Swindoll? He's not, of course, a natural man, but that's not what how Michael was saying or how Chuck Swindoll is. Like if a father really wants their son to be the artist or whatever that he is, and they're trying to force them into that mold, when God didn't create that child to be in that mold, that child has his own, how the way, the gifts and talents. I'm so sorry. Yeah, how God created each child, each one of us, we have our own gifts and talents that God has put within us. And sometimes we as parents, we're wanting to live our life through our children, and we're trying to make them do what we want them. And that's what how Michael was meaning, because it's Chuck Swindoll that was teaching that you want to go, you want to study your be a student of your child, how God created that child to help them to grow into what God has created in them. Of course, not the natural bent of sin.
Sure. But, and Chuck definitely shouldn't do that with his kids, but I really like football, so all my kids have to play football, right? It's okay for me. But or the 49ers, right? Like, that's my team, so that's got to be my kids' team, right?
Yeah, I just told them all nice hats.
Yes, they have very nice hats. So there are a few different ways to take it. And Jim, did you have something else to add? I just saw your hand.
I think it's interesting in this verse, it says train up a child. It doesn't say teaching, it says train. I used to train bird dogs, and you train them, and what you do, you have to guide them. When they don't do the right thing, you pick them up and you guide them through the right motions or actions to make them, to teach them. But you don't just say, bird dog, I want you to point and I want you to come when I call you. Mm-hmm. You have to teach them how to do it. And that's the way we had to do that with our toddlers.
Yeah.
We have to guide them through every step. And I think that's what it's talking about here. We guide our kids all the way through life.
Yep.
But as you start off, you have to show them what's the right way to do it.
And we all know that good leaders lead from in front, right? By example, going out and showing what it looks like, not just leading from behind, barking at them, telling them what to do. So, yeah, good observation. A few of the main ways to understand this verse is to train up train a child according to his way. And like we mentioned, like according to his flesh. If you train a child and just allow him to go in his natural propensity toward his flesh, and you continue to foster that fleshly desire, then when he's old, he's not going to depart from that. He's going to still live in his sinful flesh, He has fallen, depraved, crooked, and wicked, a child of wrath, even as a rest. And so if you allow him and continue to even foster and train him in that way, then that's what he's going to be when he grows up. Or the more positive stance, like it sounds like most of you guys are taking, like we need to actively, positively train them in the way, not that they naturally go, but in the way that they should go to follow after righteousness and to turn away from their sinful natural propensities. There's also a way to understand this that means that in the beginning of his way, we need to train up a child in the beginning of his way. So start when they're young, start while they're still tender during those impressionable years to train them up in the beginning of his way so that later on he will have learned from what you started with when he was a little child. So just this one verse, and I think each one of those could be legitimate ways to understand this verse, could be translated or interpreted in a number of different ways. But again, as we mentioned last week, looking at not only the context of Proverbs and verses in general and taking those into account, but realizing that not every proverb, in fact, I don't think any of the proverbs are law, right? These aren't promises, but rather they're principles. We need to recognize them as principles and not as laws. They're not promises that if we do a good job training up our kids when they're little, they're not going to grow up and, you know, go their own way and fall after their sin or the flesh or the world. That's totally a possibility. But as a general principle, I think that's absolutely true. I want us to turn to Ezekiel and see if we can demonstrate this with this passage in Ezekiel chapter 18. Ezekiel is after Proverbs and Isaiah and Jeremiah, before Daniel. Let's see. In Ezekiel 18, we see that it can, in fact, happen that you train up your child in the way of righteousness and the way of holiness, and yet that's not where he ends up. So Ezekiel 18, I'll go ahead and start in verse 1. It says, "Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'What do you mean by using this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, "The fathers eat the sour grapes, but the children's teeth are set on edge"? As I live, declares the Lord God, you are surely not going to use this proverb in Israel anymore." Talking about how the fathers are the ones who are making these decisions, they're the ones who are taking this action, and yet the children are affected by what the parents do. Verse 4, "Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the father as well as the soul of the son is mine. The soul who sins will die. But if a man is righteous and practices justice and righteousness and does not eat at the mountain shrines or lift up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel or defile his neighbor's wife or approach a woman during her menstrual period." So if a man is righteous and doing all the things he should be doing, "if a man does not oppress anyone but restores to the debtor his pledge, does not commit robbery but gives his bread to the hungry and covers the naked with clothing, if he does not lend money on interest or take increase, if he keeps his hand from iniquity and executes true justice, behold, man and or between man and man, if he walks in my statutes and my ordinances so as to deal faithfully, he is righteous and will surely live, declares the Lord God." He's doing what he should be doing. He's going to reap the benefits. Again, principle, right? Not a promise. Verse 10. "Then he may have a violent son who sheds blood and who does any of these things to a brother." Again, we're still talking about the righteous man. This man who does everything he should be doing, he's living in righteousness, says he may have a violent son, even though he's doing what he ought to be doing. "Though he himself did not do any of these things. That is, he even eats at the mountain shrines and defiles his neighbor's wife, oppresses the poor and needy, commits robbery, does not restore a pledge, but lifts up his eyes to the idols and commits abomination. He lends money on interest and takes increase. Will he live? He will not live. He has committed all these abominations. He will surely be put to death. His blood be on his own head. Now behold, he has a son who has observed all of his father's sins which he committed, and observing does not do likewise. And so it is drawing this comparison. This man is living in righteousness, doing what he ought to do, and yet he has a son who he intended to train up in the way that he should go, not according to his flesh, but he still went after his flesh nonetheless. And I think that's a good example of how the Proverbs are principles rather than law. Even this very popular proverb that I think people will often take as a law and even use as a weapon sometimes and recite to parents that they think ought to be doing a better job. You need to train up that kid or else. It's not a law, right? It's a principle. Any thoughts on that concept of principle versus law, or Proverbs 22:6 or Ezekiel 18?
It shows again the choices that even kids have to make.
Yeah.
And we all make the choice.
Yeah. And God will hold each accountable, right? Yeah. However, we still have immense influence as parents, and that's not something that we should just punt away. We need to take advantage of that and use it while we can and to the best of our ability. All right. Well, somebody remind me of the context of Proverbs as a whole. Who wrote this book again?
Solomon,
the wisest man to have ever lived, right? And who was Solomon writing to?
His son.
All right. In fact, if we go back and look at the beginning of Proverbs 2, Proverbs 2:1, Proverbs 3:1, Proverbs 4:1, mm-hmm. Proverbs 5:1, 6:1, and 7:1. What is similar about each one of those verses? How each of those chapters start? My son, my son, my son, right? Over and over again. He is addressing this to his son because he wants his son to wake up, right? Wants his son to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord. Well, let's turn back again. I know we went over this a couple weeks, but let's turn to Proverbs 1 and look at verses 8 and 9, once again, where Solomon is addressing his son. And he says in Proverbs 1, 8, I think I may have said that backwards before, but yes, Proverbs 1, 8 says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head, and ornaments about your neck." And you see here that Solomon, he's really trying to entreat and entice his son to listen. He's really begging him to not just embrace his instruction and his mother's instruction, but to look favorably on the instruction of his parents, to desire the instruction of his parents. So more than just to tolerate this instruction, more than just to not hate the direction and even the discipline that he offers, but to treasure the advice that his parents have. Now, how many of you guys did that when you were growing up? You treasured what mom and dad had to say, and you were really hanging on their every word, and you were listening.
After watching my older siblings, their mistakes, I'll be able to treasure their words.
All right. Yeah, so you learned a little bit. Good.
I had a good picture.
All right.
I had a good visual.
I thought there would be a couple in here. I didn't think it would be you. And I can tell you it certainly wasn't me. I didn't hang on my parents' every word and just wait for them to give me some instruction, some discipline, some correction. That was definitely not me. I was the other kid altogether. Well, what about now? Are you guys treasuring your parents' wisdom and discipline and instruction? It doesn't even have to be your biological parents, but the instruction, the wisdom from parent figures, from those who offer wisdom and insight into your life. Is that something you've grown to treasure? Yes, Emily. Yeah, good. Could I get somebody to look up Proverbs 23:22 and read that for us? Who's got Proverbs 23:22? Go ahead.
Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old.
All right. So that one even throws age into the equation, right? So even though for those of us who still have parents around, they're older than they once were, and there's an age where we start to lose our mental capacities a little bit, right? Not everybody, but a lot of people. And I think my generation in particular, has a tendency to look down on older people and to mock them rather than to embrace that wisdom. And there are few things that are more foolish than that. And that proverb in particular, Proverbs 23:22, again, even points out and draws out that aspect of their age. Just because they're older, don't neglect what they have to say. Don't look down on them. Don't despise the wisdom that they still have to give. And again, if we're just thinking in terms of biological parents, we need to get out of that a little bit and think more generally. People who can offer us wisdom and insight and the knowledge about the things of God in particular. Yeah, that's an easy thing for us to do. Yes, Jim?
You know, older people have a lot of knowledge, experience, and sometimes a lot of wisdom. But there also comes a time when if they live long enough, like some of our parents did, that they don't have much knowledge or wisdom, and they get foolish or silly or whatever, you know, in their old age.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that's what this is talking to especially is, you know, just because they're old, their mind doesn't work right anymore, we shouldn't despise them or look down on them. Mm-hmm. We need to love them and take care of them. Right. Honor your mother and father. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, it can be easy to grow impatient with people, right?
Yeah.
I already told you, both ways, older or younger, just you should know this, and why am I having to do this? And there's... Yeah, like you said, kind of a point where you start to revert, right? Just because of the natural decay of the body, because of sin in this world. And it can be a lot easier to just get frustrated and grow impatient rather than to be graceful and merciful with people.
It's smart of us to try to gather that knowledge and wisdom before they lose it.
Yeah.
Or before they're gone.
The thing about the honor your parents is an obligation that we have. That carries on through as they age. That becomes our responsibility to still honor them. And that might be caring for them until they no longer able to care for themselves and they eventually pass away. I think that's a challenge that comes to us. Honor your parents is a lifelong pursuit and long obligations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, I think it's become more accustomed for us in this day and age to punt on that. And we'll let somebody else take care of it. Somebody who specializes in this rather than stepping up and doing it ourselves. It's easier to pay somebody else to be their caregiver. Now, Pamela, you had a thought or question?
Yeah, I was thinking about my grandmother and that. Thank God she always had a wine and she grew up in the... She was helping aging kids during the Depression, and if there were an EMP that were to take everything out of electrical and everything, that generation would know how to live off the land. She would know how to live off the land. She would tell me, remember this plant and this plant,
and
there would come a time that you need it, and there's no food, and that you
disinfect
this plant. And yeah, she would make her own medicine.
Yeah, we were just talking during dinner about canning and making your own clothes.
Yeah,
we'd be in trouble. Yeah, good. Did I see a hand over here? I did not. Mandy's just waving. All right. Okay, so I do think that it's that we do well to check ourselves first and to make sure that we are obeying this proverb before seeking to influence our kids to do the same thing, right? We want to submit ourselves to wise counsel. We want to ourselves be open to correction and discipline, not abandoning instruction ourselves first. This brings to mind what Jesus says in Matthew 7, where he is talking about our eyes, right? He says, why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrites, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. And so it can be so easy when we're approaching Proverbs, especially in this topic of parenting, to think, okay, well, this is what I need to teach my kids to do. This is what I need to teach other people that I'm trying to influence and to disciple. This is how I need to train them up. We need to first consider ourselves before seeking to influence others. And once again, we pointed this out a couple of weeks ago when we were going through Proverbs 1, but we have to recognize that connection between Proverbs 1:7 and Proverbs 1:8-9. Remember, Proverbs 1:7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. And then Solomon, immediately on the heels of that, says, hear, my son, your father's instruction, and your mother's teaching. Don't forsake your mother's teaching. And so we need to first fear God and then realize that he's going to operate his sovereign control through the means of parents, right? God uses means in all sorts of things. In salvation, we hopefully recognize and understand that we're not saving anybody, right? That everybody comes to God because God is the one who draws people to himself. God is the one who changes hearts and gives life. And yet, God still uses wicked, sinful people like you and me to be that tool that brings somebody to the Lord, that preaches the gospel. Through our fallen mouths, he has drawn people to himself. God uses means in government, right? Wicked government. And yet they are doing what God has told them to do. They are acting as servants of the Most High God. And in the same way, he can use the training and the discipline of parents to instill in them a fear and a knowledge of God. And discipline and discipleship, they don't just sound similar, right? There's a lot of overlap there. To disciple somebody has an aspect of disciplining them and training them, like you were saying, Jim, to show them and to teach them, not just to spank them and send them on their way, right? But to foster that understanding and that knowledge. Any thoughts or questions at this point?
Yeah, we had a friend, pastor, and his son became a pastor, but his nickname for his son was My Son, because when he was training him up, raising him up, My Son, and this was so much of that became his nickname, was My Son. And somebody mimicked it to our pastor, and he said, no, only my dad calls me that, because it reminds me he trained me up to love him. And he's 45, you know, already saying this. You know, and I just thought it was a sweet thing.
Yeah, not just a generic nickname.
It wasn't a generic thing, it was My Son. You know, it sounded like My Son to all of us.
That'd be a good reminder for the dad too, because you don't want to say My Son in anger or in a way that again isn't demonstrating that you're leading by example. That's cool. That's a good story. All right, well, let's turn. We've looked at just briefly, we talked about, I guess, the starting of those first seven chapters, save chapter one, how they all start with this little phrase, My Son. Let's turn to Proverbs 12:1 and Proverbs 13:1. Could I get somebody to read those for us as we consider the attitude that we should have toward discipline?
Proverbs 12.
Yep, Proverbs 12:1 and then Proverbs 13:1.
It says, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid.
Did you guys know that? The Bible says stupid. Doesn't mean my son can say it, but. And then you have 13:1 for us too.
It says, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, But a scoffer does not listen to rebuke.
All right. Again, before thinking about our kids, let's think about ourselves, right? Let's think about ourselves and take that plank out of our own eye. But what are some things that we see there in both those verses? What is the attitude that we were to have toward discipline?
Acceptance.
Yeah. And not only accept it, but don't take a baseball bat and bat it away, right? Which, again, I think is our natural tendency. You want to correct me? You want to discipline me? No, get that out of here, right? That's for somebody else. Yeah. And if you're looking in 13 still, in 13:1 again says, a wise man accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And if we go down a few verses, we see that this is actually quite consequential. If we look at 13:18, it says that poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline, but he who regards reproof will be honored. And so that's essentially saying the same thing, but there we see the consequence of neglecting discipline, of not regarding reproof, that poverty and shame will come to him. Again, not a promise, because there are people out there who are wealthy and they're not very shameful and they didn't listen to their parents' discipline. But as a general principle, this is true, right? Poverty and shame will come to those who neglect discipline, and he who regards reproof will be honored. It's a good principle that we ought to first live by ourselves and then seek to instill in our children and those that we have influence over. If we jump forward to Proverbs 15:5, we see a similar concept. Proverbs 15:5 says, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Again, similar concepts, right? In all these different verses, we see it all throughout Proverbs. These are just a few examples. But again, we see that this also is consequential. Looking down to verse 10, it says, grievous punishment is for him who forsakes the way. He who hates reproof will die. Sheol and Abaddon lie open before the Lord. How much more the hearts of men? A scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise. And the result of that, of not going to the wise, of not loving reproof, is that he will die if he forsakes the way. That's pretty consequential, isn't it? That's a big consequence for not listening to wisdom from those who go before us. And toward the end of the chapter, we see a similar principle. He who neglects discipline despises himself, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding. The fear of the Lord is the instruction for wisdom, and before honor comes humility. So if you want that honor, don't take any shortcuts. You need humility first. Any thoughts or questions on that concept, our attitude towards discipline? All right, of course we need to, like I said, check our own hearts and correct our own hearts first. But how do we actually go about affecting and influencing our kids or others that we're seeking to have some kind of positive influence on? Our disciples, how do we affect and influence others to do this? Any thoughts? Pamela?
I'm thinking just kind of like what you were saying, that we have to think about, you know, look at it at ourselves first, you know, that what you said, what Jesus said in Matthew, you know, look at yourself, you know, before you judge.
Mm-hmm.
That here our kids are going to see if we're doing that, you know, it's like what I think Jim was saying, you know, it's
modeling,
not teaching but modeling. And that's the most, you know, when we're looking at ourselves, because if as we're, God is revealing himself in his word,
mm-hmm.
he's the best father, because he's trying to help you avoid all these, you know, evil or wicked or consequences, to help us make wise choices of being led by him. And if our kids see that, instead of just telling them you need to
Yeah, we could have quite the opposite effect if we're not doing that, if we are living hypocritically, right?
That's what you preach. Yeah.
But repetition. We need to be consistent.
Good.
Parents, it gets old. You get tired. But we need to be in the game.
Amen.
Because we need to be in the game. We don't need to give up. We need to be consistent.
Yeah.
Reminding.
I think along with that, you have to be a good listener.
Yes.
You have to hear what they really say and try to understand. That's the only way you can have dialogue with them about what you're trying to convey or teach them in a way that they understand. And you have to be able to listen to them.
Yeah, good. Yeah, last week we looked at speech. This week we're looking at parenting. But we don't want to take these principles in isolation, right? Proverbs says plenty about listening, about speaking, and we need to combine it all together, not just try to teach without listening. And yeah, Sandra, what you were saying, repetition reminds me of the great Shema passage in Deuteronomy 6, right? These words that I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. Like looking at yourself first, right? Take that log out of your eye first. It shall be on your heart. And then, verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, repeatedly, right? To be consistent. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So, yeah, constantly keeping these teachings, keeping the words of God before our kids, and realizing that they could still go their own way, like we looked at in Ezekiel 18. But, man, these are some principles to seek to do our best to live by. Any other thoughts how we might affect or influence this attitude in our kids?
As a body of believers, we need to encourage other parents. You know, because, we've all been there. Mm-hmm. We were the young mom that wanted to rip her hair out.
Well, I wasn't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, hang in there. Just keep it up. You're doing a good job. Yeah. It pays dividends. It may or may not, but do what you need to do.
Right. Yeah, that encouragement is key, right?
So, I mean, well, yes. Yes.
I think that one of the primary things that we need to keep in mind is that, for example, with your children, this kid at school is bullying me or whatever. When you're speaking to them, listen to the whole story before you say, oh yeah, he's just a bully, and punch him in the nose or whatever, that you need to actually listen to what's going on and don't automatically assume that because something your child is saying something bad happened to them, that it's necessarily the other kid's fault. Key parts. And I think that applies universally when you're talking to people you're trying to influence, you're discipling or whatever. Things that occur bad, they might hit you wrong too, and it might be sin, and there's no question about that. But you don't want to overreact. You want to be as full of grace as you can be. There is a time for direct confrontation, but there's also a time to be gentle and understanding and try to.
And that's what moms are good at.
Yes, yes.
Not that dads shouldn't do
much
it too.
Much better than me, Stacy is. Yeah.
Or even if that kid is being bullied, but maybe something happened to the other kid to make them act a certain way, and there's more to the story too. Say that they've lost a parent or something, and it's making them act out at school, which looks like they're bullying, but really they're struggling.
Yeah, it's a disgrace to a man to answer before he has the full story, before he hears, right? And yeah, we'll look at that principle here in just a moment, too. All right, well, I want to consider our approach to discipline, how we consider, okay, well, we know that we ought to discipline, right? There's benefits in discipline. Let's consider for a moment our approach to discipline. And I really want to get your guys' help in tracking down some of these proverbs. Can I get somebody to look up Proverbs 17:10? Who can get that one? All right, Mike, you get 1710. Michael Cruz, lost your last name for a second. Why don't you get 1925? And then stay in 19 for a second. We'll grab a few there. What about 1324? Who can work there? Evelyn? 2215? Pamela? And then 2915? Joseph. All right. Let's see if we can tackle some of these. Mike Smith, do you have 1710 for us?
I do. A rebuke goes deeper into the one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool.
All right. So, not all of our kids are going to respond to discipline the same way, right? Some of them, 100 blows, that's necessary, right? For some of those stubborn middle kids especially. But if one has understanding, a rebuke will oftentimes go deeper even than 100 blows. What about 1925, Mr. Cruz?
Strike a scoffer and then
All right, so taking and pairing those two proverbs together, how should that affect our discipling? Yeah.
What type of person? Is he listening? Is he just too, up in his ego? Or is he humble? Is he willing to listen?
Sure.
Because you're dealing with a person who has, he's making choices whether he's going to stay.
And oftentimes we come to figure out who we're dealing with by taking these same steps, by reproving somebody and learning by experience. Like, oh, okay, well, he didn't take that well, so I need to maybe take a different approach next time.
Sometimes you got to consider if they have autism or ADHD, too. That's a whole
different. Yeah, we're all different beings, and God has created us differently. We have different struggles, but we all have the same standard that God has held us to, and we need to do our best to approach each other in love and gentleness and respect. And Michael, you're there in 19. Will you go back and get 18 to 20 for us?
Sure. Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. A man of great anger will bear the penalty. For if you rescue him, you will only have to do it again. Listen to counsel and accept discipline, that you may be wise the rest of your days.
All right. Well, that's a pretty low bar, right? Discipline your son while there is hope. Do not desire his death. So if you didn't want your kids to die today, you kept this proverb. Yeah. So the general principle here, again, is kind of going along with that last understanding of Proverbs 22:6, that you need to start young while they're still a youth. And that doesn't mean that if you have an older kid or somebody else that you're trying to influence that's older, you just give up on them. But man, if you start young, you can make a pretty big impact early, and waiting has consequences, but that doesn't mean we stop, right? Any other thoughts on those Proverbs there, 18 to 20? That's a good little chunk of Proverbs right there.
I think the heart is revealed, again, by someone, whether they're listening. It says, verse 20, listen to counsel and set discipline. So that's, it's a choice that we're making, whether it's a listener or not. And it just reveals the heart if someone's listening, or if they're not listening, that reveals the heart that they're just they're being stubborn and hard-hearted.
Yeah, and we can still learn from that, right? That's still a plus, or we might not look at that as a total win. Like, hey, man, I tried to correct my kid, and he just wasn't hearing me. He's just full of pride and bitterness. But the one positive thing in that is that you can see, okay, well, he needs some heart attention, right? And just keep working on that, working away, plugging away, and praying that God would be working on his heart, because ultimately he's the one who has that ability. Well, let's jump down to the last proverb in Proverbs 19. It says in Proverbs 19:29, judgments are prepared for scoffers and blows for the backs of fools. And so we can see that, it kind of sounds weird, but grace isn't always necessarily the answer, right? Again, that sounds weird to say, especially in a church building. Grace isn't always the answer. But when dealing with your kids, I think some people can, and I think that moms are more wired this way to, well, let's show them grace, right? Let's let them off the hook. I don't want to discipline them. I don't want to go down that route. That's not always the answer. Sometimes, but not always. Judgments are prepared for scoffers and blows for the backs of fools. As we've been looking throughout several of these proverbs, discipline is a good thing. We need to hold on to that. All right, we have a couple others out there. Who's got 13:24? Evelyn.
Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline.
All right, Joseph's favorite verse. Mm-hmm. Or maybe most remembered verse.
Sure.
But yeah, if you spare the rod to hate your son, that's pretty strong. And that's one that the world doesn't agree with, right? Yeah, more than that, several times.
Yeah.
Yep. And 22:15, who's got that one? Go ahead.
Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him.
All right. Again, going back to the heart and how it's not only just foolishness is touching or has somehow affected the heart of a child. No, it's bound up in the heart of a child. And we're the same way, right? And we may have redeemed hearts, but we still are sinful in our flesh, and we're still going to struggle just like Paul did, and we do what we don't want to do, and we have to check that first and then realize our kids, it's their heart where foolishness is bound up. And we don't want to just address the outward behavior, but we need to get to the heart. And 29:15, who's got that one? Joseph.
Says, the rod and reproof give wisdom. The child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother.
All right, again, addressing the rod and the need for discipline. And our culture, our society doesn't like this concept. Even as Christians, we can kind of cringe and turn away at this idea of discipline. But our attitude toward discipline should be aligned with God's attitude, not just toward discipline, toward everything, right? Wherever God is, that's where we want to be as Christians. And so let's turn to Proverbs 23. And we have a longer section here. I'll read from 12 to 16. And as I do, let's see if we can focus on our attitude about discipline. It says, apply your heart to discipline and your ears to the words of knowledge. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Again, even though we might be tempted to at times, don't do it. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. That's good. But just, again, for those who have a tendency to hold back, stop. He's not going to die, right? Just do what God says. Verse 14, you shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. Again, consequential. And we have an ability to impact and to influence him through discipline. Verse 15, my son, if your heart is wise, my own heart also will be glad, and my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. That should be our attitude toward discipline. We need to align ourselves with what God says about discipline. Realize he's not going to die. A little bit of discipline. Of course, we want to do it lovingly and gently, and we can't cross a line, but There are ditches on both sides, right? We can err on not disciplining enough or on disciplining too much.
Do anything that makes a difference on how many times you strike him with a rod?
Yep.
Just make sure the rod's not a piece of rebar.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting into some real trouble doing that. Not just with the government, but with your God, too.
Yeah, I'm like, I would not give my child a rod.
It doesn't mean like a steel rod.
Yeah.
Of course not.
No, I, again, I think that's crossing a line.
That's right, Evelyn. No, that would not be good. Right? That would not, I mean, anyway.
Yep. Not a piece of rebar.
But you know, I'm sorry, but you know what? If the world would just, you know, the bad guys, the mafia or the gangsters, they have their own discipline. But and yet, it's almost like I am thinking of the war with Israel and Palestine. I'm not trying to be, I don't know where everybody falls at that, but you know, who was it? What president? Because you do, God does give authority to so that they won't do it again. You know, because what happened was, and they knew. Maybe I'm trying to be in something that I shouldn't. But it's like if the world would use this common sense, you know, that's what we use the big stick for, you know, like
discipline is formative, right?
And I'm sorry?
Discipline is formative. It's it's corrective and that
for the good way, for the right way, not for the wrong.
Well, it's like that's what jail's supposed to be for, but it doesn't necessarily, people just are sneaky about the way they do things rather than accept that they get trouble with us.
Yeah. Yeah, discipline should, and just the thought of penalties and punishment, that should correct and change and direct our behavior. All right, let's turn to Proverbs 17. And while we're going there, Jim's got something for us.
I have a question. I've heard different people say, try to redefine the word wrong, and I don't know exactly what. I've heard people say it's more like a switch. Some say it's like a piece of cane or a reed or something like that. I don't know. I've not research that word.
It could also be part of a shepherd's staff.
Yeah, I don't think they're talking about a 4-foot piece of wood that's, you know, bigger than a broomstick.
No, and we don't have to go out and find the exact type of rod that they used when Solomon was writing this. Again, I think it's a principle that we need to grasp onto, that discipline is necessary, and that doesn't just mean saying you need to stop it and don't do it again, right? It should go beyond that. Mike's got his jokes tonight. All right, Mike, since you got all your jokes back there, I need you to read this verse for us. Proverbs 17:6. You're a good one for this verse.
Grandchildren are the crown of old men.
All right. We need to play the long game in our discipline, right? This doesn't just address the fathers, but brings grandparents into it, talking about the grandchildren and the legacy, the heritage that you leave, and how your training up your children is going to have an impact and an influence on how they train up their children. We need to, look beyond just this one time. Like you said, Sandra, we need to be consistent. We need to be diligent in our discipline. Looking down at verse 21, says he, this is kind of contrasting. So that's where we want to end up, right? Where 17:6 is, with our grandchildren as the crown of old men, the glory of sons as their father. That's where we want to aim for, right? Or where we could end up, verse 21 says, he who sires a fool does so to his sorrow. And the father of a fool has no joy. Or verse 25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. And so we have kind of two paths that we can take. And each time that we're given this opportunity to discipline and to, again, go too far with our 4x4, or just by giving them a slap on the wrist and letting them get off because it's easier, that's going to have potentially great effects down the road. We see this same concept over in 29 verse 17, where our kids could end up if we don't correct them. It says, correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. So, okay, that's a positive one. He gives you comfort, delights your soul, but we know that the inverse is true as well. All right, and to wrap up, I just want to go through several real quick and see if we can get practical for a moment about what things we should and should not be ways that we should not be training up our kids. Could I get somebody to look up 1926 for us? Who can get that one? Mike Smith, 2020. Who's got 2020? Joseph, Mr. Cruz, you can get 2315. And can we get one more over here for 24, 21, and 22? Hayden. All right. 1926. Let's see if we can hit these quickly.
He who assaults his father and drives his mother away is a shameful and disgraceful son.
All right. So we should not permit any kind of assault, like even minor slaps or none of that, right? As parents, we can't be permitting that. What about 2020?
He who curses his father or his mother, his lamp will go out in a time of darkness.
All right, so cursing, just verbal cursing, again, not something we should allow or put up with. We shouldn't be tolerating that at all. We get this same concept in 30 verse 12. It says, there is a kind who is pure in his own eyes, yet is not washed from his filthiness. We need to be willing to correct our kids. Let's see here, 11. There is a kind of man who curses his father and does not bless his mother. Can't put up with that, right? Shouldn't be talking back to mom and dad. Shouldn't be cursing them whatsoever. 23:15. Who's got that one? Go ahead.
My son, if your heart is wise, my one heart also will be glad.
All right. If you catch that, if your heart is wise, my own heart will be glad. And we are so accustomed to wanting our kids to be happy. And I think that's a standard for a lot of parents. If my kid is happy, then I've done my job, right? Not necessarily. It says, if your heart is wise, that should be our desire, to have wise kids more than happy kids. And I think wise kids will result in happy kids, but maybe not in the moment, right? That shouldn't be the standard, to have happy kids. 24, 21, and 22. Hayden?
My son, fear the Lord and the King. Do not associate with those who are given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin that comes from both of them.
So here, I think we can see very practically that we should be overseeing our kids' associations, who they're hanging out with, who their friends are, and the world's not going to like that. They're going to say, you let your kids hang out with whoever they want, you let them be them, you let them do what they want. No, we have been given stewardship over our kids. We need to be careful who they're hanging out with. We saw this, again, in Proverbs 1, to walk with sinners, that's going to have effects. 1 Corinthians 15:33, that bad company corrupts good morals. This is a principle through and through, and we need to be careful who our kids are associating with and hanging out with. A couple other Proverbs along this line, 28:6-7. It says, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. He who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. that's not saying don't let your kid hang out with the fat kid down the street. That's saying don't let your kid hang out with people who are making poor choices, right? With people who are self-indulging, who are more concerned with feeding their own personal desires than the glory and the holiness of God. And then next chapter, 29:3, says, a man who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. Again, be careful who you associate with yourself, who you let your kids associate with. It's going to have an impact and influence. Let's see, two more. Andy, will you get 28:24? You were talking about it a little bit earlier. And then I'll grab the last one for us. 28:24, are you there?
I'm there.
Okay.
He who robs his father or his mother and says, it is not a transgression, is the companion of a man who destroys.
All right, so we cannot dismiss sin. We cannot overlook sin or try to avoid the issue, even if it's to try to save the relationship, if it's try to make things more comfortable or less awkward. We cannot dismiss sin. And then chapter 30, verse 17 says, the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. Surely you guys know what this mocking eye looks like. Again, it starts with the heart, right? Just an attitude that can have a mocking response, even if it's just in a glance or a look or a stare. Thank God that it didn't manifest into action, but we shouldn't be so concerned with our kids behaving and not progressing to the action. We don't want to raise a bunch of moralists or legalists who are keeping these outward rites and laws, right? These Pharisees, when their hearts are crooked. And we have to realize the problem is much deeper than just action, much deeper even than words. The problem is in the heart, and we need to do our best to cultivate hearts that are longing after God and desiring His word in our kids and disciples and those that we have influence over. Any final thoughts or questions before we wrap up?
I got one. All right. was that it was underneath the verse where the lady said about the speech. What was that? It was 20.
I already confessed. I'm not good with Proverbs and remembering what's where.
There's something where underneath it, it was just saying that, okay, my it's 23:15. My son, if your heart was wise, my own heart also would be glad. Verse 16, and my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. So I'm just saying it's an indicator. Wait, the child speaking is an indicator of child's heart.
Yep.
Because, you know,
out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Yeah. Yep. Good connections. All right. Well, let's pray and we'll be dismissed. God, we do thank you again for the kids in the opposite classroom. Pray that you would give each of us a love for them, that you would give us influence in their hearts and in their lives, that we would encourage one another in our parenting, that we wouldn't just look in our own little corner and what it is that you've given us and stewarded us with, but that we would realize that we each have a responsibility to pour into the people in this church, and that those kids are a part of this church, are a part of this body. God, help us to check our own hearts, that we would be men and women that long to serve you, that we would have hearts that long for you, and that you would give us influence in the lives of others. God, it's not easy being a parent. Give us wisdom, give us your strength, your ability. Help us to do it well to your glory, and that we would have kids and grandkids someday that know you and love you and strive after you, unless you come back sooner, God. We look forward to that day and pray that you would come quickly, Lord Jesus. We pray this in your name. Amen.